Our state is reaching an awful milestone today. We can't know for sure how many COVID cases are out in our communities, but the number of confirmed cases is expected to round the 500,000 mark today. That's at least 500,000 people who've been infected. Sometimes a look back helps us focus what may be ahead. And we've invited two Michigan radio reporters today who've covered aspects of the pandemic, Kate Wells and Dustin Dwyer. Kate, Dustin, welcome.
Thanks, April.
Thanks.
Kate, you're based in Southeast Michigan. Dustin, you've been reporting from West Michigan for many years. And while there have been serious situations on both sides, I know that what you saw on the ground over the last 10 months looked pretty different. Dustin, when this pandemic started, is my memory right? You were actually in the hospital yourself?
I was in the hospital for the first week of March. So that was before we had our first confirmed case in Michigan, but there was coronavirus in the United States. I had gone into the hospital February 28th. I had a heart surgery that had been scheduled, and I ended up in the recovery of that, ended up in the ICU. So I had sort of this firsthand look, not as a reporter, but as a patient inside an ICU just a few weeks before the lockdown really started.
Is there anything that you remember about maybe how medical professionals were talking about the situation at that time or just the seriousness with which they were taking it?
Yeah, I had a conversation with one of my nurses, you know, just in a normal conversation. She was sort of like, what do you do? And I said, well, I work in news. And she was saying that she had to turn the news off because she was hearing too much coronavirus and it was just everywhere. And she was making the point that, as a lot of people made back then, that the flu was really bad, and a lot of people underestimated the flu. It had been a really bad flu year in Michigan all the way back in January of 2020. It feels like a million years ago, but I was reporting last January on schools in West Michigan being closed because of the flu. So it had just been this bad flu season, and they were already full. I mean, the ICU, when I was there, there weren't any available beds. And so my thought was, if this coronavirus does happen, if it is as bad as they say it's going to be, where will the people go?
Kate, you were covering Michigan's presidential primary race when all of this began, which I think a lot of us assumed was going to be the story of the year. But you quickly shifted to be part of the team that was covering the pandemic full time. What were you seeing that spring?
Well, I think we all remember how quickly this happened. I mean, I remember going to the first press conference about when we had the first known COVID-19 death. It was a Beaumont press conference. I show up there, and for the first time, all the reporters in there were sort of standing like 6 to 10 feet apart from each other. And I remember how we were all just sort of constantly craving any new piece of information, but also feeling wildly terrified and overwhelmed. And I was doing the same thing that everybody else was doing. I was like dropping $400 at Kroger, buying, you know, canned goods and everything. And my partner is an emergency medicine doctor. And I remember that at first he felt like this was sort of being overblown. I remember us sitting outside a bar a couple of days later when it really hit everybody that this was going to be extremely serious, that this was real, and that this was right here in Michigan. And the two of us just looking at each other and being completely terrified of what this upcoming year was going to be and what he and his coworkers were starting to see inside these hospitals in Southeast Michigan.
Yeah. Dustin, was there a moment when the gravity of what was happening hit for you?
Well, West Michigan was very different in those early days. And like I said, I was not reporting at the time. When Kate's talking about, you know, reporting on the state's first death, I was still recovering from my surgery. I was not at work. And even just sort of personally, I didn't know as many people who had it. It just wasn't over here in the same way that it was in Southeast Michigan. But it changed things. It affected things. And certainly, you know, the biggest thing in Grand Rapids was on May 30th, following the death of George Floyd, when there were protests in Grand Rapids and downtown was sort of ransacked. And I was down there covering, you know, people bashing windows and setting fires in the streets. That certainly felt different. And it wasn't, you know, covering the virus, but it was clear. I vividly remember seeing fires in the middle of the street in downtown in my city and just feeling like things that seemed so unimaginable were now real.
How has the messaging and the tone changed over the past year from the doctors and health systems that both of you have interacted with? Kate, could you maybe start us out?
Yeah, I think the messaging and the thing that we hear from healthcare workers has stayed very consistent in terms of them saying, this is serious. If you're not seeing what this does to patients up close and what it's like to have to die alone, essentially, other than the healthcare workers who are maybe holding up an iPad for you to see your family, then you can't understand how serious this is. Please take this seriously. I think what we started to see this fall and really experience, especially before the vaccines came out, this exhaustion. And I think even as, you know, reporters, we felt this too, of saying to each other, like, we're just telling people the same information over and over and over again. And it seems like a certain subset of people get the message, but are understandably fatigued and just need to be able to live something akin to a normal or sane life. And others are just deciding that this doesn't affect them in the same way. And it seems very hard to change anybody's minds. We'd talk with these, you know, these healthcare workers and these contact tracers who were seen and experiencing the exact same thing. Contact tracers who would be calling people, telling people that they needed to quarantine, that they'd been exposed. People telling them, yep, I got it, while they would like literally hear them starting up their truck and driving somewhere at the same time. So that exhaustion felt really tangible.
Dustin, in light of that, I think I'd like to change gears a little bit and ask you a slightly different question. Given that level of exhaustion that Kate was talking about, can you think about a medical professional that you've spoke with whose situation or outlook has been fundamentally changed by the pandemic?
Well, yeah, I talked to a nurse in Muskegon who quit her job because she couldn't take it. I mean, one of the things that happened with this virus in particular is that I heard this from multiple nurses that when it got to a certain point, they felt like there was nothing they could do. And for someone in the nursing profession, you know, as one nurse told me, you know, there's always something we can do to make the patient more comfortable. Even if we know the end is coming, you can fluff their pillow, you can get them a drink, you can do whatever, you can bring their family in. And those were things that they just couldn't do with these patients. They would reach a point where all they could do was watch. And that took an enormous toll on the frontline healthcare workers that I spoke to. There was another nurse who spoke to me in Muskegon who worked in the ICU who said she lost every single patient for 2 months straight. Not one of her patients survived. And these are not experiences that these people will get over anytime soon. The families obviously won't get over them either. I mean, the people who lost their lives, the people who are still struggling with some, you know, symptoms of the virus, but also the healthcare professionals. It's not as if, you know, everything will magically change in a few months and everyone will forget that this ever happened.
Yeah. I wanted to ask the both of you what your questions are and concerns going forward into 2021, based on everything that you saw last year. Dustin, you want to go first?
I have a million questions. Questions about the virus. I still want to know what's this going to be like in the interim between when most people are able to get their first dose, when they get their second dose of the vaccine, and how is behavior going to change? Are we going to see cases rise again in West Michigan and throughout Michigan? We've been really lucky to see cases declining. But I look at the numbers every single day to wonder, are we going to see another increase? Broader than that, I mean, I still think there's just a lot of changes that are coming. Like I said, the people who experience this up close are going to have a lot to deal with in the coming year. I think our economy is going to have a lot of shakeout. There's still many people without jobs, still many people who can't pay their rent. It's far from over.
Kate Wells, how about you?
Yeah, I think the question and the thing that I'm really struck by is also related to vaccines. My like technical question that I hear a lot of healthcare workers who have even gotten vaccinated asking is, when will we have enough people vaccinated so that we will have enough data to be able to answer the question of, once you are vaccinated, are you still capable of transmission? Can you still get somebody else sick, even if you yourself are largely immune to serious symptoms? So that's something that in the short to midterm, we're all really wondering. I think the big overarching question I have going into 2021 is how are states and these local areas in Michigan that have been largely essentially tasked with figuring out this massive, unprecedented logistical challenge, how are they going to proceed with not just vaccinating healthcare workers, which in some ways, unfortunately, is the easy part because we know who they are. They all have are essentially, you know, employees of the same places that are giving these vaccines out. They're still running into all of the logistical challenges that come with that. As simple as like, there are hospitals where, you know, they're not sure which form, do they need to fill out a different form to get the Moderna versus the, you know, the other vaccine versus the Pfizer vaccine. We're still at that level of logistics being asked in some places. What is this going to look like as we try to broaden this to more people? And I think that's what everybody is wondering right now.
Michigan Radio's Kate Wells and Dustin Dwyer, who both spent time in 2020 reporting on the COVID pandemic. Guys, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, April.